This
is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop. I used to get mad at my school. The teachers had taught me weren't cool. They're holding me down, turning me around, filling me up with your rules. I have to admit, it's getting better, a little better, all the time. Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. And you know, I'm just looking at you, and I had not noticed this before, but I know that you love cats because in several episodes recently you've been kind of pulling on cats. Well, I shouldn't say pulling on cats, but using cats as examples of various things. But I see you've got a cat. May I see that? You've got a cat glass case.
It is my glasses case.
And it actually has two eyes and a nose of a cat, which is very
odd.
Can you talk about this?
I acquired that in Portland, Oregon when I attended a public radio conference several years ago. And it caught my attention because of its feline nature.
It has a feline feel to it, but it's metal.
Yeah. It's a glasses case.
Interesting. It's a little odd.
Well, that's your opinion.
That is my
opinion. And you are entitled to it. I did want to talk about something interesting that I thought we had discussed before, but it turns out we hadn't. I was remembering back to a couple of years ago, we talked about role models and role models for students and role models for teachers and adults and sort of how we look to role models.
Right.
And I was talking to someone else in another context not long ago, and the topic of mentoring came up. And I thought, that could be good for a podcast. Oh, but we've done that before. And then I realized, but, you know, mentoring and having a role model are not the same thing. You know, if you do a Venn diagram, there may be a little bit of overlap there, but they're actually two very different things. And I thought it would be interesting to talk about mentors and mentorship and the value of having a mentor as opposed to having a role model, more someone that we admire from afar.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never really thought about that, Jennifer, but you're right. I suppose that when I think of a role model, that person can be far away. It could be someone who I don't even know, but I aspire to be, or I see and see elements of that I want to replicate, even though I might not even understand it. Whereas a mentor is much closer. So that's a person who not only do I know, but the person has taken the time to know me. And then to offer wisdom, counsel, advice, guidance, and so forth in order, directed at me, in order for me to think about how I might want to change or evolve or grow. So that's interesting. I never really thought of the distinction before. But yeah, I think a mentor is a much closer and requires a relationship, whereas a role model doesn't necessarily.
Do you have a mentor, would you say?
Oh, I've got tons of mentors. Yeah.
And how did you go about choosing them? And did you formally ask any of them to be a mentor? Or is it just kind of a relationship that has evolved
I think these are relationships that evolve. And I like to think that I'm a mentor to some other people as well. And again, it's not like we officially, you know, came to an agreement or signed a contract or, you know, someone handed someone, you weren't pinned. But rather, it evolves over time that you begin to know each other. And there I think needs to be some element of either curiosity or some resonance. And it could be because of a shared experience, a shared background, a shared culture, a shared anything. In some cases, I think it's kind of the opposite, that sometimes having a mentor who is different from you offers a perspective that might otherwise be missed and is thought-provoking. And I've experienced, you know, a variety of those different types on both sides of the mentorship relationship. But for me, it's just who you're drawn to, who you find is open to listen to you if you're looking for a mentor, who is open to care, to show some interest and care, and then what they say or their actions or their implications somehow challenge you or resonate with you in good ways. And I think that then that leads into this type of relationship. And then I think it becomes very personal, right? So, you know, some of the mentors who are in my life, You know, I know them very well. They know me very well. I feel comfortable sharing thoughts and perspectives and plans with them that I might not want to do just with kind of random people. And that's also nice to have a sounding board where you know it's a safe relationship where no one's going to be judgmental, but in fact listen ideally open-mindedly and then ask questions, right? Then start to say, okay, well, let me probe you. If you really want to do that, what about this? And why are you thinking that way? And then all of a sudden it provokes thought, which is of course what all things should do.
It's interesting to hear you talk about having a mentor because I think some people, and I may be in this group too, associate having a mentor with somebody who is, not that you're not young and spry, but let's just say on the earlier end of their professional trajectory. Maybe
they're
in college, they're just out of school, and they're
absolutely
sort of looking to get a foot in the door, sort of how to get started in whatever area they want to explore.
So you're basically asking very nicely, you're pathetically old,
no.
Ed, and how could you possibly still have mentors that are still alive?
What I'm saying is I think it's great that what you are illustrating is the importance of having mentors throughout our careers.
Correct.
And that there's not some sort of magical time when, I became president of Southwestern University. So, well, I don't need one anymore.
I'm done.
I'm perfect. Gotten this job. And so I don't need any guidance or help anymore.
Well, and there's something else. If you're talking about kind of where you are in your journey, I don't think that a mentor necessarily has to be someone who is older than you. But again, it's the perspective that they bring and the questions that they ask and the inspiration they offer. And so, you know, I've engaged with people who have mentored me who are younger than I am. I have less experienced students. So I don't think it's always an age dynamic that's there, but it's how can I grow and become a better version of myself through interactions with people who will provoke thought, and they come in all ages and all shapes and sizes and backgrounds and everything else.
Well, and I would heartily agree. I also, for me, knowledge comes into play. So for example, there are things that I know because I entered radio at a time when there was no digital technology, there was no social media. So as I've gone along through the years, I've had to look more back for mentorship and training about those kind of things rather than look forward to people who've been in the profession longer than me.
Right.
Because often they're in the same boat.
That's right. And so you're looking for people
am.
Who are kind of a little bit younger and are more attuned to the technology of the time.
Well, and I will tell you, it's not exactly analogous to a mentorship, but it has taken me years to get over the fact that all of the doctors I have are now younger than me. But I decided that that was a good thing because they are closer to the latest technology, latest knowledge, latest information. And I've gotten past it, but it was an interesting sort of hurdle to get over that assumption that, well, the doctor needs to be older than me because he or she would be wiser. And I'm like, no, actually, I wouldn't mind somebody who is, you know, not that doctors of any age don't do this, but who is a little bit closer to some of those innovations. And so.
So actually, I experienced the exact same thing. I went to see a doctor. This was many, many years ago, and I had a little bit of an arthritic elbow on my right arm. And I just wanted to see if there's anything that could be done about it or what's going on. And I went to see this guy, and his name is Jonathan. And it turns out that he is a former student of mine, took Calculus 1 with me 100 years ago. And I was fine with that because he was a smart guy, and so I had no problem with that. But when I made some comment about, he took an X-ray and said, "Oh yeah, you've got a little beginning of an arthritic thing going on there, and it's not so bad now, but you know it's not going to get any better." And I made some comment like, "Well, how could that possibly be?" And he had the audacity to turn to me and say, "Well, Dr. Berger, you're not a kid anymore." And I said, "Jonathan," I said, "I want you to know that I can change your grade in calculus. Even though you've graduated from medical school and your undergraduate days are long behind you, I can still change that grade. And so watch it, pal. But so I experienced that myself personally, and it was not pleasant, you know. Yeah.
Well, I am wanting to delve into our puzzler. I have to say, I've enjoyed puzzling and thinking through this one. I'm not sure I've gotten to the solution, but I like the path that I was on.
Well, let me remind our listeners what the puzzle is, and maybe if you're willing, you'll share some of your path. So we have these two cogwheels, so these two round discs that have teeth in them. The larger one has 24 teeth and is fixed, like it's attached to something. and it doesn't move. And the other one, the smaller one, has 8 teeth, and it rotates around the larger wheel. And so the 2 teeth kind of mesh up. And so you have the 24-tooth wheel that's fixed, and then this 8-tooth wheel that can rotate around the larger one. And the question is, how many times does the smaller wheel turn compared with the with the original bigger wheel? And so, and the way that I put it last time was, if you, at the start of the experiment, if you were to paint the top cog of the top tooth, if you will, of the little wheel, like red, how many times will that red cog be on top as it journeys throughout its journey? That was the challenge, and I'd love to hear your journey.
Well, I'm not finished with my journey, but I will tell you where I'm on it. So, well, first of all, instantly when you said cogs and whatever, I thought, I'm out of here because this is machinery and I don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting response.
So a negative bias.
So I had a negative bias and I thought, well, I'm just going to set that aside.
But overcome it. So you overcame your bias.
It was just interesting, though, my immediate assumption that, well, this one's going to be really hard because I'm not a mechanical person.
Right.
So then I thought, well, you know, I could make this a little easier on myself. Mm. And rather than have the two cogs be round, what if I made the big one flat and just essentially unrolled it? Mm-hmm. Because you still have the same number of teeth, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's just in a different form mm-hmm. that is less daunting to me.
Mm-hmm. Like so, this, like what I'm drawing right here.
Exactly what you're drawing right there.
Right.
So that's as far as I've gotten.
Oh, well, but now you have to finish it live.
Now,
okay.
Right now I'm going to finish it live.
Yeah, well, so now I put this, so that has 24 teeth.
So it has 24
horizontal.
Teeth. Right.
24 right, teeth
so
on a horizontal.
Right, so all I did was take it and make it horizontal
and now
instead
But now let's keep going. So now yes. I'm gonna take the 8-tooth one. You
yes.
see how I've done it here.
Uh-huh.
And put it on the very left edge.
Right.
Okay. And let's say that I have this tooth be red.
Yes.
And now I want you to think how many times.
And you're going to roll it down the length of the 24 tooth.
Right. And watching it. Yeah. So now you can now, well, what's the answer
so
there?
I think that a knee-jerk answer is 3.
Right, exactly, because you take 24
eight.
And divide it by 8.
8, and you get
and
3.
So it does it 3 times, and that's absolutely correct. And that's the correct answer to the Jennifer puzzle.
To the flat puzzle.
Exactly. But now we have to remember that the original cog, the large one, was actually round.
Right.
So, in fact, it wasn't just going horizontally, but it was actually orbiting around. And in that orbit, if you think about it, it makes one complete
right.
extra one.
So it's orbiting as the smaller one is orbiting.
Right. So it's basically going to go around one extra
time
because it goes around the large one. So it goes around once for the large one.
One.
Right here it was going straight in your
right.
example.
Right.
But if it's around, then it actually will go once around. So it's actually going to be
4 times.
Exactly. So 3 of yours and then
and
one because... Well, because the shape wasn't straight, it was round, and that gives you one more.
Uh-huh.
So the answer is actually 4. Now, the natural guess that people would say would be 3,
because
it would take 24 and divide it by
right.
8. But the tricky part is that since it's not flat, but I love the fact that you found the correct question to which 3 is the correct answer,
uh-huh.
which is if it were flat. The fact that it's round gives you an extra one,
uh-huh.
and that's where the 4th one comes from. So I love it. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I like... getting to the answer from the flat one to the round one.
Yeah.
Because what I forgot was that the fact that that they both are actually round just makes an added element to the mechanics of
That's
it.
Right. And do you feel that I was a good mentor as you were thinking through that puzzle?
I do, for many reasons. One of them is because you worked in my medium. So what I often do when you start describing a puzzler is, what is the first thing I do?
You draw a picture.
I start drawing
always.
Pictures.
Even if it's not visual, you'll draw a picture.
Oh, I'll always draw a picture. That's right. And that's what you started doing when I said, well, okay, let's make it flat.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed's got a elongated cog, essentially, with 24 teeth, and then has a picture of a wheel with 8 teeth that's going to go rolling down it.
Right.
So I like that you sort of met me where I often work on these, which is visually.
And that's what, I mean, and a good mentor will do that, right? A good mentor will resonate with a person because they can speak, in some sense, the same language. And if you are trying to inspire or move an individual, then you really want to be able to speak their language, meet them where they are, and try to inspire a change from there.
Well, Ed, thank you for always meeting us where we are.
Nice.
Well, sometimes you have to because we have to be in a recording
studio. Exactly.
Right,
exactly. KUT.
But thank you for meeting us wherever we are on many levels. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.